What we're gonna do right here is go back, way back, back into time.
This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue. Welcome to my neighborhood, the Avenue. I grew up here, and each week I'll be sharing the sounds and stories of the people that made the Avenue great. Welcome back to the Avenue. June is Pride Month, the annual celebration of the LGBTQ plus community. The Avenue has a unique relationship with this community. Trans performers and drag queens were a staple in the neighborhood dating back to the early years of the Avenue entertainment scene. They were often billed as female impersonators. Nearly every club on the Avenue featured female impersonators. And nearly every musician on the Avenue was working alongside these entertainers, from Sly Hampton to Jimmy Cole. Despite their popularity on the Avenue, female impersonators rarely had the opportunity to record. And audio documents of these artists are extremely rare. But on this week's show, we'll be featuring music from female impersonators who performed on the Avenue. We'll also hear memories from Avenue artists who worked alongside female impersonators. Valda Gray was one of the most famous female impersonators to emerge from Neptown, performing at Avenue venues like the Trianon Ballroom and the Walker Theater. Valda Gray was a producer of female impersonator shows and managed a troupe of dancers that became famous at Chicago's Cabin Inn nightclub. We'll start this episode with music from the artists featured in Valda's show, including Jean LaRue, who recorded two singles with the Indiana Avenue pianist Jesse Crump. This is Jean's 1946 recording titled Blue and Lonely. Let's hear another track from Jean LaRue from 1946. This is Trouble, Trouble. That was Jean LaRue, one of the artists featured in Valda Gray's troupe of female impersonators. Petite Swanson also worked as a female impersonator with Valda Gray's ensemble. Swanson recorded a single for Sunbeam Records in 1947, and we'll hear both sides of that record now. This is My Jockey Knows How to Ride, followed by Laudy, Miss Claudy.
Here comes my jockey riding down the street. Here comes my jockey riding down the street. Dressed to kill, got his boots on his feet. Ooh. back. Soon as the joint got jumping, the jack got kicking back. Then I was real gone. I was high as I could be. I said, Lordy, Miss Lordy, look what the good Lord has been for me.
We just heard two songs from Petite Swanson, a female impersonator who performed with the famous Indiana Avenue drag queen Velda Gray during the 1940s. Up next, we'll hear music from another female impersonator in Velda Gray's ensemble, the blues vocalist and comedian Billy McAllister. From 1952, this is Billy McAllister with All Right Daddy.
Well, all right, Daddy, I'll see you tomorrow night. Well, all right, Daddy, I'll see you tomorrow night. We're gonna jump a little bit and make everything all right. When I start jumping, I like to come on with the bang.
That was Billy McAllister with All Right Daddy. In 1973, Billy recorded an X-rated album for the comedian Rudy Ray Moore. Let's hear an excerpt from that record.
Some girls want hamburgers further down the street. I'm the kind of queen likes a great big piece of meat. Ain't they modified? I want the long kind. How they might find you without the pickle and the mustard too. Hot dog!
You're listening to a special Pride Month edition of Echoes of Indiana Avenue. We're paying tribute to the drag queens and trans performers who worked in the neighborhood's nightclubs. They were advertised as female impersonators, and nearly every club on the avenue featured female impersonators alongside jazz, blues, and R&B musicians. One of the most popular avenue clubs to feature female impersonators was the Famous Door. Last year, WFYI's Kyle Long spoke with the legendary Naptown journalist Eunice Trotter. Eunice wrote about the Famous Door during her years as an entertainment reporter for the Indianapolis Recorder. In this clip, Eunice shared her memories of the Famous Door.
There were all sorts of acts. That included female impersonators, which were a big part of the Avenue culture. And do you remember seeing some of those artists performing at that time? What did
you
make of that?
I used to go to a place. I can't remember.
The Famous Door. And Betty Kay's
Betty Kay's.
Yeah, I want to ask you about this.
I had a lot of gay friends or, you know, drag queen friends because of our neighborhood and because of writing for the Recorder. So I would go there and do reviews of their shows, too. And I would do honest, you know, reviews of their acts. And so they had a lot of appreciation for the kind of reviews that I would try to give them. And so definitely wasn't homophobic or any of that. So I had a lot of interactions with them away from that scene and got to know them as people. Matter of fact, one, John, who's now deceased, his name was John Taylor, called himself Jackie. He's taught me how to put on makeup. And so when we would get ready to do shows, he would do our makeup. He'd put on the eyelashes and the wigs and all that stuff, the powders and all that, because we didn't know what we were doing with that stuff, you know, but he did. And so, yeah, we had a great relationship. And so I don't know that there are any of those clubs now like there used to be, but they were definitely a wonderful opportunity to showcase talent from that community. You know, as well as to have a social gathering place for them, you know, where they were safe, because it was a big deal then at that time. There was a lot of attacks on, you know, gay people, you know, here in this city. not just by homophobic people, but even by official police.
Right. There's a long history of the police harassing and targeting this community.
Yes.
And you were one of the only writers going into clubs like the Famous Door and writing about this in a serious way. And you featured the Famous Door and Betty Kay's Social Club in your column, Party People. And I wanted to ask you specifically about that. The Famous Door was located adjacent to Indiana Avenue. It was in the Avenue neighborhood. It had been a nightclub for many years. It was the Pink Poodle, famously, during the early 60s. And by the late 60s, it had become the Famous Door, and it really become kind of a showcase for drag performers, right?
Sure
for
was.
Female impersonators, as they called them.
Yes.
Yet, tell me about the atmosphere of the club and kind of any memories you have of being in there.
Well, you know, as I said, you know, I got to know a lot of the gay and drag community, you know, from the neighborhood because, you know, living around the 2300 block of Broadway, we had a heavy drag neighborhood there, area. We were not that far from the Black Curtain.
Okay, yeah, the theater.
Where there was a lot of drag performances as well. And just, you know, and then I worked at this restaurant part-time called The Huddle. And it was next door to a nightclub called The Embers. So it's where the gas company is now located, right over there. And I worked in the restaurant side, but the restaurant and the bar were connected, so you could just go through the kitchen and be in the bar. I mean, I was underage, so I had to stay in the restaurant working at night. But after hours, the drag community would be at the Huddle. It was a 24-hour restaurant. So they would come there after, you know, the clubs, you know, closed. And so they gave me this name, Lisa, because they decided they didn't like Eunice. So Alisa is my middle name. So they would call me Lisa. That's how they knew me. That was my name then, period, in that whole community. Even today, I know a few guys who were in that community who are still alive. And he still calls me Lisa. But, you know, they would complain about their restriction and their oppression in this city. In every arena, whether it would be socially, civically, you know, professionally, and, you know, they would say what they had to do just to survive. So many of them are deceased now. That AIDS epidemic came along and it wiped out a bunch of them, you know, and because they just didn't really realize and know what it was at that time. And those who didn't get affected in a fatal way, became, you know, very much different people because they wanted to live. And, you know, so it was sort of a sad era going into the late 70s and early 80s, you know, after that disastrous period, you know, that they went through.
Yeah, I wanted to ask if you knew about any of the particular artists who are famous on the Avenue. There's a few people I'm interested in, one of whom is Candy LaVerne, who was one of the top entertainers. Candy LaVerne and the Cover Girls was her group.
Yeah, I remember Candy LaVerne.
Yeah.
I sure do, yeah. And you know what's interesting, too, even about that era? They were black and white mixed in these venues like no other venue in the city. You wouldn't see that, you know, where you'd have black and white entertainers in one place at one time entertaining together on the same stage. And so that was the Candy LaVerne, you know.
It was a multiracial group.
Yes, it was very much multiracial.
That was journalist Eunice Trotter sharing her memories of the Famous Door, an Indiana Avenue nightclub that featured drag queens and female impersonators. Echoes of Indiana Avenue will return after this short break. This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue. On this week's show, we're celebrating Pride Month by looking back at the trans artists and drag queens that were a popular attraction in Indiana Avenue clubs. They were billed as female impersonators, and we've been listening to rare recordings of female impersonators who were connected to the Avenue scene. Vocalist Josephine Cheatham grew up on Indiana Avenue, and she shared her memories of working with female impersonators during a recent interview with WFYI's Cal Long.
Another type of entertainment that was featured all over the Avenue were the female impersonators. What did you make of that? Do you remember some of the female impersonators that used to entertain?
I'm trying to remember, but there were lots. There were lots, and they were beautiful, and they were entertainers. They were truly entertainers. And back then, I knew that they were men, but they were pretty men because they was dressed up as women. And I didn't know what a female impersonator was. This was an entertainer as far as I was concerned. So, but they were awesome. I wish I could remember some of the names, Kyle. You probably know some.
Like Candy Laverne? Do you remember that? Tanya Dupree was her name.
Tanya Dupree.
The snake dancer.
Yes. Oh, that was awesome. She'd be on stage doing that thing with the snake. And I would always be kind of scared that the snake was going to get off and, you know, and slither into the audience.
One thing that interests me about this is these are people who might not have been accepted in other facets of society at that time, yet they were able to find a place within this entertainment culture. Why do you think that is? Why do you think they were accepted on the Avenue and in this circle of entertainers?
Everybody that was an entertainer was accepted on the Avenue. I mean, we saw people just as people. You know, I knew that they were different, but they were beauticians. They were musicians. You saw them in restaurants. They were just people. And they were accepted for who they were.
Do you think that the segregation and the discrimination that the Black community of Indiana Avenue had faced in their lives kind of played a role in them being more empathetic to these entertainers?
I think so. Yeah. I think so because we were a community of people. It was our community. And that community stuck up for each other. And we cared for each other. So, yeah, it was different. Segregation on that part was good for the Black community because it brought us a tighter knit.
Up next, we'll hear music from vocalist Frankie Halfpint Jackson, one of the earliest female impersonators to become a recording star. Frankie performed on the Avenue in 1933 at the Trianon Ballroom. Frankie Halfpint Jackson recorded several sessions as a female impersonator, including a unique version of How Long Blues, a song made famous by the Indiana Avenue blues legend Leroy Carr. From 1929, this is Frankie Jackson with How Long Blues, featuring Tampa Red on guitar. That was Frankie Halfpint Jackson with How Long Blues. Frankie was one of the earliest female impersonators to become a recording star. Throughout this week's show, we've been listening to memories from Avenue artists who worked alongside female impersonators. Up next, we'll hear from saxophonist Greg Bacon. He spoke with WFYI's Kyle Long in 2021.
They were variety acts, right? It was sort of like the vaudeville type of entertainment style. Did you ever work with Tanya Dupree, the snake dancer, or Iron Jaw Memphis? Did you work with any of those folks?
Yes. You've been talking to some people. Yes, Iron Jaw would skate at Robbie's Lounge and put a chair and be circling like this with the chair in his teeth. I played back in the day before LGBT and all that. I played behind male strippers, not male strippers.
They called them female impersonators.
Female impersonators.
Yeah.
I mean, they look good. They were people who come to see their show.
Right. That was a big part of the nightlife scene is what they called female impersonators.
That was big down there.
Yeah. And that was just commonplace to play behind these entertainers.
You play behind everybody. Nobody cared. We just wanted to keep working.
Did that name ring a bell that I asked you about Tanya Dupree? She danced with snakes, and she would often play with Iron Jaw, female impersonator. Candy Laverne, any of these names ring a bell?
It does. Yeah. But it's going back in my beginning, right. But that was kind of shocking to see and to even be on that set to see these people.
Right, because you were just a teenager. It was
time. That putting you in school for real.
Yeah, yeah.
You're really in school for real.
But there wasn't any sort of judgment or hatred directed at these trans performers, these female impersonators. Yeah.
No. Hmm. No. It was entertainment. We play all night, and one of them said, "Hey, Greg, take me home. Can you take me home?" Yeah.
Next, we'll hear a 1932 recording from Billy Banks, a popular vocalist who worked with the Naptown band leader Noble Sissel. Bill listened to Banks' recording of Mean Old Bedbug Blues, which featured Banks performing both the male and female voices.
I had a quart of moonshine laying on my dresser drawer. Two big bedbugs come and drink it and bit me cause there wasn't no more.
We just heard a 1932 recording of vocalist Billy Banks performing Mean Old Bedbug Blues. That song featured Banks performing both the male and female vocal parts. Another singer who was known for singing male and female duets by himself was the R&B vocalist Tiny Kennedy. Tiny Kennedy made many appearances on the Avenue, performing at clubs like George's Bar. Up next, we'll hear a 1952 recording that features Tiny's work as a female impersonator. This is Newspaper Boy Blues.
Well, baby, 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 I ain't going for that. If he weighs 300 pounds, that cat's too fat.
I only want his loving, and I love every pound. Now ain't no man can beat him when he lays his loving down. Got a newspaper boy.
That was Tiny Kennedy with Newspaper Boy Blues. On this week's show, we're celebrating Pride by looking back at the trans artists and drag queens that were a popular attraction in Indiana Avenue clubs throughout the neighborhood's history. Vocalist Debbie Nelson grew up on the Avenue, and during a 2019 interview with WFYI's Cal Long, Debbie recalled working with local female impersonators like Tanya Dupree and Candy Laverne.
And then they had this voluptuous dancer.
Tap dance.
She was beautiful. She was just as nice looking. She was beautiful as a woman.
Tanya Dupree?
No.
Candy Laverne.
Candy Laverne, and handsome as a man.
Yes, she was.
Beautiful as a woman.
She was.
And handsome as a man. I saw her in a suit, hair, everything. I didn't even recognize her. She was on her way to a funeral. But then I've seen her turn it out if she had to in there because the man didn't do what he was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Pull that seat out for me. You know better. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved her.
Did you ever perform with Tanya Dupree?
The name is familiar.
With snakes.
Oh, yes. I've been to her apartment.
Oh, really?
She put the snakes around me. I was trying to remember, whose house did I go to that had snakes? Yeah. That's who it was.
What do you remember about her act?
I couldn't believe it, how she would put those snakes on her. But I wasn't afraid. I wasn't afraid of them or anything, but I just... a lot of people's like, no, she would come near them. I'm like, uh-uh, don't do that. But when I went to her apartment and when she started putting them on me there at Surfside, because I was kind of gullible. And then when she invited me to her apartment, one day I think I had to take an outfit she had left at Surfside, something. And she said, you want to see the snakes? I said, they're not going to bite me, or they? She's like, no, I have control. She had this big yellow boa.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, that big yellow thick. And she said, just don't, you know, just relax and everything. And she put it around me. And so, I mean, I was too scared to shake.
We'll end this special Pride edition of Echoes of Indiana Avenue with the Jewel Box Review, a touring group of female impersonators that made several appearances at the Avenue's Pink Poodle Nightclub. The Indianapolis writer, producer, and broadcaster Tom Alvarez saw the Jewel Box Review perform. Last year, Tom produced a cabaret show in tribute to the Jewel Box Review. Tom also visited Indiana Avenue's Famous Door Nightclub, where he watched local female impersonators perform. Tom shared his memories of the Famous Door and Jewel Box Review during an interview with WFYI's Kyle Long last year.
Yeah, and we're going to spend some time talking about your latest production, which is mm-hmm. Jewel Box Review 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And the subject of this piece is a troupe of female impersonators that were founded in 1939, I believe, the Jewel Box Review. They toured across the United States during the 40s, 50s, and 60s and were a tremendously popular nightclub act. They played at the Apollo, New York, in big theaters across the country. Beyond the entertainment value of the Jewel Box Review, this group was really important for a variety of reasons, culturally and even politically, you might say. Not only was this a group of gay entertainers that were traveling the United States at a time when this community was being harassed, persecuted, and marginalized, they were also a racially mixed ensemble at a time when that was not common in mainstream entertainment. So this is an incredibly important part of American entertainment history. And you're bringing this name back, the history of the Jewel Box Review. Tell us, why did you focus on the Jewel Box Review for this production, what it means to you?
And as your fellow broadcaster, this is why I love your show so much. And I so respect you because you do your homework.
Thank you.
I don't know where to begin. I went to Finocchio's.
You saw the Jewel Box Review.
A legendary drag venue that I think it began in 1936, and they finally shut down in 1999. So, of course, I made a pilgrimage there during one of my first trips to San Francisco, which, you know, for a gay guy, it's just like a Catholic going to Rome. Of course I had to go to Finocchio's. And so I saw the Jewel Box Review in their waning days, like in the early 70s, and I was completely captivated. I was blown away at this troupe of female impersonators. Up to that point, I had seen lip-sync drag. With all due respect to lip-sync drag performers, I in no way denigrate that as a separate art form. It's a different art form. But, of course, a valid. So they're apples and oranges. I have to make that clear. But to see these men create this illusion, to see them complete this illusion. And of course, now I'm a reviewer, so for years I have judged art based on its seamlessness and been an arbiter. And if I can get lost completely in the artist and what they're doing, that to me is success. That is illusion making at its best. And they were, you know, and of course, their production values, the costumes, the makeup, the live music, everything. And of course, by then, I had seen a few Broadway shows, and I was just really excited and amazed. And so that's another one of those things that I tucked away and said, maybe someday I can you know, produce this, or, you know, at the time I was, you know, early in my TV career, and I wasn't even close to what I'm doing now, producing live entertainment myself.
I wanted to talk about, you know, the fact that the Jewel Box Revue did perform in Indianapolis several times during the 1960s, and I believe the first venue they played at was the Pink Poodle Nightclub on Indiana Avenue, which was Aretha Franklin played there. Local jazz stars like Jimmy Coe played there. This was a famous local nightclub. It later became, it went through a variety of changes in the 60s and eventually became the Famous Door. And in the late 60s and early to mid 70s, this was sort of the premier drag club in Indianapolis. And you told me you had the opportunity to patronize the Famous Door on Indian Avenue. Tell me about this.
One night, a group of friends, we made, who had a road trip and came to Indy, and we went to the Famous Door, and oh my gosh, it was just unbelievable. It was, and the hostess, I wish I could remember her name, but she was just that classic kind of acerbic, sarcastic, kind of had that comedic kind of vibe that she was just really, she could improv, and the things that she said on her toes, it was just so much fun. It was just so much fun. And of course they had a dance floor too, so between the after the drag show you could dance there. And so, yeah, the Famous Door, it's a shame that it doesn't exist, you know. And I think it was right near the State House.
Yeah, it was on Senate.
There you go.
Just adjacent to the Indiana Avenue neighborhood, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And what was sort of, do you remember anything about the clientele, the ambience? What kind of people would patronize
well,
the club?
Well, I mean, it was mixed. Yeah. And, you know, Indianapolis was and still is always very mixed. Lesbians and gay men. Together, many people will tell you, gay people will tell you, that Indianapolis is very unusual that way, that gay men and lesbians mix very comfortably here. And that's not always the case. There's a lot of separation in other cities.
That was Tom Alvarez sharing his memories of the Famous Door and the Jewel Box Revue. We'll end this week's show with music from the Jewel Box Revue, a multiracial performance ensemble. The Jewel Box Revue featured female impersonators who were Black, Latin American, and white, like T.C. Jones. And we'll listen to T.C. Jones' 1961 recording, All in Fun.
All in fun. This thing was all in fun. When all is said and done, how far can we go? A cocktail, a supper, a show or two, a line in Lally's column that links me with you.
That's all the time we have this week. Thanks for joining us for this look back at the unique history of female impersonators and drag queens on the Avenue. You can meet me here on the Avenue again next week, same time, same place. And you can find the Echoes of Indiana Avenue podcast on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you download your podcasts. Echoes of Indiana Avenue is written and produced by Kyle Long and hosted and co-produced by me, Herman Butch Slaughter.
Nobody knows on uptown, baby, like I do. Nobody knows on uptown, baby, like I do. Do. If you will stop and listen, I will tell you a thing or two.